I'm Colin Grant, and I'm the director of Writers Mosaic, which is a magazine and a division of the Royal Literary Fund. And we are very blessed to be associated with the Royal Literary Fund because they've been in existence since 1790, which means we probably have some longevity ourselves. And we're going to be watching four films tonight. And the films come about through the good work and the sharp mind of my colleague, Gabriel Bademosa, who will be chairing the event. We are going to show these four films, and Gabriel will explain when it comes to the conversation what they are all about. We're going to show them in succession, one after the other. We're going to dim the lights. There are only 3 or 4 minutes each per film, and then after those films have come to their completion, Gabriel will chair the discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This I understand, the instinct to cling at any cost to the place you are rooted, to see another season through, though the others seed elsewhere. Even in this sedentary act, you push the limit. Winter becomes summer, becomes winter, and you are steadfast on your crag, your outcrop. No one knows the shape of your limbs against a darkening sky. You question the need to grow against the wind. Despite what they say, there's no mystery in simply holding on. And what is home, if not the choice over and over again to stay?
A dead rat could be a dead lung, except nobody wants to touch a dead rat without gloves. At the end of the funeral, my son asks, when will she climb out of the box? He learned to say pigeon by asking what that flattened thing was in the driveway. Each morning for a week, he'd run to the window, waving at its disintegrating wing. Like this, he learns the perils of grapes, to grip banisters and stand still for sunblock. In the park, he insists we race, and like any good father, I make my body age. He leaps claiming victory. I feign sadness, offering his rapture a little more time.
He wants to keep a leaf for a pet. I want to warn him about getting attached to things already lost. In the bath, he needs to know where water ends when it disappears along with the dirt.
At the table, he folds a napkin into a frail boat, pushing it along an edge. We watch a snail work the earth. He asks if the trail is a thing it makes or it leaves. Ladybird blood is a firm yellow, containing only signal released when danger's close. He balances a blueberry on a spoon, reaching for my hand before crossing. When a cyclist is down, most of us will stand. One of us kneels. Nobody's sure where to touch.
Give me a little less with every dawn. Color, a breath of wind, the perfection of shadows. Till what I find because it's there. Gold in the seams of my hands. And the nightlight burning.
Tonight, holding a stranger in my arms, suddenly a downpour, a late summer storm. I thought of you, alone or not alone in that distant city. And at that house where the punk musicians' bars and the carpeted bars with their well-coiffed, careful clientele are closing. Those strangers pairing off at last, and each desiring what little mercy the other can afford. That wasted breath of neon light, a frail tattoo, or come on in pools of rain. That street, that rain. No, our street, our rain. Holding her, not you, I watched finally, empty. Watched until the street reddening light of dawn came back and touched the quiet brick of empty dance halls. Touched behind the blackened tavern windows, a girl's cast off blouse, touched even the popped faces of musicians on posters. There, gun club, millions of dead cops, almost as if dawn light could hold all things, each piece of shattered glass, as if to somehow bless them or make them whole again. It can't, or it won't. And it's late for blessings. All night I've held a woman who tomorrow I will not want to see again, and who tomorrow probably will feel the same for me. And so at last the two of us will have something in common, a slight embarrassment. Someday in winter, passing on a street, a quick amused glance before we turn away. I don't expect much anymore. Or else that city is so far away by now, it seems made of great light and distance, even though it was mostly only a house, just like any other, lit at dinner time by human speech, the oldest of stories, something in common. I remember now, after scolding him, the precise and careful way my two-year-old son once offered me the crust of his own bread, holding it out so solemnly, as if it mattered, holding it with great care.
And if I might perform a short introduction, we have here Rob Akin, one of the filmmakers. We have here Marjorie Lotvy, one of the poets. Anthony Anaxagoru, one of the poets. And Savannah Aqua, one of our fantastic filmmakers. Thank you very much. Well, we have about 50 minutes, actually, first of all, to hear from the poets and filmmakers. But just to start, first of all, I should say that the strand of films is called UK Global Majority Poets on Film. There's a reason for that. Writer's Mosaic, this division of the Royal Literary Fund was generated in response to significant changes, demographic, social, and cultural. In that, where before someone like a poet from Cyprus or a poet from the States or from Iran might have been slightly marginal to the progress of English literature, it seems to me pretty clear that our demography has changed, who we are has changed. And we shouldn't be marginal, we should be central, gathering all of ourselves together. All of us are included and are part of the mainstream. So that's one logic for this strand of filmmaking, which still continues and more films are in the pipeline. The second thing is the technological change. Do you know that way that cash is king, cash is great, you know? But most of my purchases are with plastic. So too with literature, with poetry. The book is great, paper is fine. Let's still keep tearing down the forests and producing this as a medium to read poetry. But actually, people have moved technologically online. People read online. And 80% actually of online reading is on the mobile phone. So it occurred to me that poetry too should have this opportunity to migrate into the audio-visual space of these kinds of films. It's kind of logic. So having laid out the logic behind why these films came to be, let's pass now to the experience of them. If I could first of all speak to the poets, Anthony and Marjorie. Marjorie first. What kind of a shift was it for you to perform your own poetry on film?
I would say for me it was an uncomfortable shift because it feels like acting and I'm not an actor. And so my style of reading at a reading is largely just to read because I want the audience to step in that gap in a way and make of the work what they want. So I'm not really a performer even when I'm just reading on stage, I wouldn't say, although that's arguable. So for me it was uncomfortable. I was delighted to have professionals around to tell us how to do it and then to be very gracious when I kept forgetting my words over and over. And especially that second film, which is incredibly short. It's not mine, but it's incredibly short and I kept forgetting the lines. So these two were incredibly generous. But yeah, I found it a very strange transition. I never started writing poetry to perform it, to be honest. And so then to find yourself even further behind a camera or further down that road behind a camera was a really interesting transition. And yet if it opens it up to new audiences, so be it, it's great.
Anthony.
Yeah, similar to Marjorie, I found it quite odd. I think one of the things that poetry has within it is the fact that the language is already affected. And I think what actors are trained to do is affect language. But if the language is already affected, you have to somehow unaffect it through this kind of dramatization of the poem. And that was what I found quite difficult. I did actually start in spoken word, in performance. So like learning, and that speech is very different when you're writing a spoken word poem to when you're writing, when you're reading something that was written for the page and you're finding the life that can make it live in the air and give kind of the language more, I guess, kind of meaning when it's up in the air. So that was quite difficult. But yeah, like similar to what Marjorie was saying, it was great with these guys to kind of look at how you can physicalize and portray some of the kind of nuances within the language. And my piece, the Larry Levis one, was very long. And we hired out this kind of bar. Where was it? I can't remember where it was. It was around the back.
Battersea?
Yeah, Battersea way. Yeah. And we went there like 11 o'clock. I'm not actually drinking whiskey. It was apple juice. It was good apple juice.
Ruined the mystery.
I know. I had to tell people that. 11. So yeah, that was it.
Yeah, great. Okay, let me switch to Rob and Savannah, filmmakers. Short films. Short films have images, they have mood, they have rhythm. In a way, they're kind of poems themselves. How did you think about taking a poem as your source material and the poet as your protagonist and creating a film with that? Let me let you think about that, because you're twisting your lip there, Rob. And go to you, Savannah. Great.
Yeah, I completely agree that films feel like poetry in themselves. And my favorite films feel like poetry, especially and kind of have that sort of inherent rhythm and stuff. But yeah, I think, it felt like it made total sense to me, sort of combining the two and responding to the poems in that way. It felt like the pace was really sort of led by the poems, and the kind of story or images that we had were, I mean, I guess it's a challenge sort of putting an interpretation onto a poem and kind of not wanting to change that too much from how the poet might have seen it, but also you don't want to dictate that for audiences either. So there's sort of, you want to kind of leave it open in a way if you can, I felt, trying to make them. But yeah, it feels like they really do fit together and kind of
You don't feel
combine.
That there are kind of two poems vying for the same space?
Interesting. Yeah. No, that's maybe the challenge, is you kind of want to avoid that, I guess. Whether it's successful, I don't know. But yeah, I guess like kind of if it's as much as possible to bring the two together.
Rob?
I think for me, having done some films that are quite similar to this, it was making sure that it didn't feel like a recital and make sure there was like a natural performance aspect to it. From a technical aspect, it was making sure that like tonally the camera, the color, the pacing of it was all kind of there, ready to go before I got on to location. And then just allowing the space for them to sort of like do their thing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then having those parameters that kind of allow for sort of like happy accidents to sort of happen on the day. Like I remember with Things Already Lost, we weren't planning for that torrential rain, but that kind of lended itself, that lended itself to the film. It kind of touched on that sort of like sentimentality and the nostalgia in the poem.
Is what happened when the two of you met?
Sorry, say that.
The rain is what happened when the two of you met.
Exactly, exactly.
And so is the film.
But yeah, it was kind of one of those things that kind of worked in our favor and we kind of just lent into it. And again, just using those elements to our advantage, like even with the rain, I added that rain sound into the edit, just giving an extra layer to sort of like take it away from it for you. Like he's just reciting the poems and it feels like an actual film.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, Rob made both of the films with Anthony, and Savannah, both of the films with Marjorie. With my co-producer, who's sitting somewhere in the audience, Tommy Creer, there. We spent some time thinking about kind of matchmaking between filmmakers looking at their work and the poets reading the work. Did we do a good enough job? I won't ask that because that's not a good question. Did we do a good job? But there was a kind of quality that we were looking at, which was what kinds of performance could be generated from what we imagined might be the meeting of the two artists, the filmmaker and the poet. And it seems from the evidence of these films, it kind of, in these cases, it just completely worked. But then to take a thing that you've said, Anthony, about needing to kind of calibrate differently the performance, given that it's on film. Can I ask the filmmakers, what kind of performances, what kind of work did you have to put in to create the performances? Were you looking for these films, having met the poets? How complicated was that work for you?
For me, the main thing when I first spoke to Anthony was just listening to how he spoke, just on the Zoom call, just so I can get an idea of like his tempo, his cadence, and then seeing how that could relate into the poem. He'd already told me, like he'd said, that he'd done some sort of spoken word before, so I was confident that like on the day things would kind of flow. But from a filmmaking aspect, it was kind of just making sure that like the location and how he moved around the space and outdoors sort of lent itself well to how I was going to edit the poem and the pace of his reading of the poem, essentially.
Yeah, I think, like you were saying before, Rob, sort of leaving it very open kind of felt like the main thing, and leaving space Yeah, we'd spoken quite a bit before about the poems and what they meant to us, and kind of spent time together as well, which I feel like sort of maybe helped to allow for that, kind of being as much as possible on the same page about what we were trying to get out of the films. And then, yeah, I feel like, I don't know, it felt like you kind of did your thing and it worked well. And yeah, sort of following Marjorie as much as possible, I guess, with that, and being led by that and having options as well. Yeah.
Well, they do say, or you very often when you hear actors being interviewed about, oh, Michael Caine, how did you get through that sequence in Zulu, right? Very often actors will say you do as little as possible. Do as little as possible in front of the camera. From the evidence of these films, it seems that both you, Anthony, and you, Marjorie, you really kind of lowered the temperature to allow the poems to speak through you on film. Was that conscious? Was that what was going on?
Yeah, it will have been for me, but that is probably the way I normally read work, in the sense that I don't want to put ideas into the listener's ear. I want the listener to take it on and have their own ideas about what it might mean or what it might be about for them. Because if I tell you a story, it's only a story. But if I tell you something that you might turn into your story, I think that's more impactful. Mm. I think for me, it really helped that I was in a place that I knew well and I felt really comfortable. And it's probably why Savannah suggested we go out to the shore. It's one of my favorite places, and in the garden, because then suddenly you feel familiar. There's something about the surroundings that you feel really at home at, and hopefully that comes through in a way. But yeah, I was trying not to act, because I really don't whisper it, but I don't love it when people act poems.
You did, to me, appear to be handling the poetry, the words, very carefully. And that very directly became part of the action of the film. You're holding the fruits, you're touching the tree or the photograph. It was about a kind of careful handling of things, which seemed to emerge from your delivery style for the words.
Yeah, that's, I guess so. Yeah, now that I think about it, yeah. I was just saying it in the way that I would say it in my head while wandering around. I didn't have a glass of whiskey to hand, so I had to go for apples. And
I was going to say, but you, Anthony, you ripped your shirt off, man. You went for it.
Sorry about that. That was Rob's idea. I actually got ill after that shoot, because it got so wet from the, it was actually pissing down, and then we went home and I was absolutely saturated, and that jacket was Tommy's jacket. So there was a whole load of things that we were doing as improvisation. But yeah, like, your question's an interesting one, because I think with poems, the language is the main character. And that's what you let lead. And you're a conduit in that sense. And you're kind of delivering. But I also think there's an interesting thing here, that film, as far as I'm kind of aware, is the only medium that contains all art forms. So music, poetry, dance, kind of everything is contained within the medium of film. So because of that, you can step back a bit and let the medium itself communicate these ideas into people. So I think when you're on a stage, say you're a theatre actor or you're a spoken word performance poet, it is very much about the body and using the body to convey kind of swathes of information. But when you're on a film, the mind is processing so many things visually, and all those things are communicating into the kind of observer's mind and psyche. You can just let the thing go. So taking confidence in that and trusting the language of the poem and allowing the kind of setting, the stuff that enhances that experience.
I must at this point confess that I came across Tommy Creer and the New York folks from Adrian Brinkhoff when they approached me to film a poem. And I'd always liked that poem. It's kind of in my head, and I kind of always kind of tell it as a party trick because it's a nice poem. But after the film, it was completely changed. It wasn't available to me in the same way. It had changed. Can I ask both of you, you first, Marjorie, did it change your poem, The Hebridean Crab Apple Tree, for you?
It probably did for a little while. I didn't read it for a while because we spent about 12 hours with me reciting that poem over and over again. And I'll tell you, there's no better way to kill your own work than to do that for you. But it's a very useful poem in terms of what's happening in the world just now, both in Iran, but also in places like Gaza and other parts of the world. So I've resurrected it and do read it a lot because it's relevant. But yes, I would say you wouldn't believe how many takes it took to get those 3 minutes.
You do still read it, but when you now read it, are you reading the poem that you would have read before the film, or are you somehow sort of in the gestures and the movement of the way it was filmed? Has there been a permanent change?
I think it probably not. I think I had to stop reading it for a while. Yeah, I pulled it back. And partly because I'm often not standing at the seashore reading it or up in a tree reading it. So that helped me get away from it in that sense of it in a way. But yeah, probably for a while, I just couldn't bear it really because I just thought I've said that so many times.
So among the things already lost, not this poem. This poem is still yours. It's still free of the film for you, or?
I think it's still free of the film. I have, like, that's an old poem. I wrote that in 2018, 2017. So
you think of that as old?
That's old for me, yeah. I mean, and also I'm one of these people that I write something and after about a year, I don't like it anymore, even when it's in a book. Something that I have to kind of struggle with. So I think the poem was fine, but it's still set in my head as the thing that I wrote in 2017.
Okay, then to move back just from these films, and I'll open it shortly to the audience, I'd like all of us to kind of think a little bit about this kind of work, this thing that we've launched, that poets who haven't necessarily developed a performance style or a lifestyle suddenly are faced with a new medium, film for poetry, which gives it vast reach. It would reach a lot more people than necessarily sitting within a collection in a book. Do you think this is a good move for poetry to blend itself, meld itself with film?
Absolutely. I think, sure. I mean, I disagree with you. I think books are wonderful. It's like going back to a comment you made earlier. I think the younger generation that I know, my kids are back to reading books in a way that they didn't for a while. So I'm more hopeful. But I think absolutely the more people that can be exposed to poetry, the better. And I think if film's a way to do that, I'm all for it. And especially when it's dealt with in such a sort of tender and thoughtful way. It's when it clubs you over the head that I'm less an admirer of it. But when it's dealt with like this, for sure, I think it's wonderful.
Do you think, Anthony, that your film Things Already Lost has reached a bigger audience than it did before through this film?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe.
What's your feeling about that going forward in your work?
Yeah, I mean,
are you going to make more films?
Probably not. but I do think that poetry is a very malleable art form. And if you really think about it, you've got like poetry, the noun, and then you've got poetry, the verb, and you find that it's in everything, all parts of society, from advertising to, you know, like religion, like there's poetry in everything. And so I kind of feel that it's very adaptive, and the kind of plasticity of language allows it to kind of be and find itself in all these different spaces. So I think more poetry films are good. It kind of just gives it another dimension. Like, I don't think we should confine the poem to a book or confine a poem to kind of a CD or an LP or whatever it might be. The fact that it can live in all these spaces is good.
Great. So Rob, so Savannah's already kind of agreed that maybe the form of the short film is already a kind of poem or poetic kind of medium. But I'm just wondering, in terms of your work, going forward, do you feel that working with a poem as your basic material to make a short film is something that you would continue to do, or that you would need actually to kind of also make films away from those texts? What's the angle of difference between those two for you?
I mean, I think a healthy mix of both for me personally, just because initially I got into filmmaking from a narrative perspective. So I write scripts myself. Nothing quite like that lends itself to poetry, but I think using my expertise and my skill set across both is probably the way I see it going forward. But the one thing that working on poems I found interesting was the sort of rhythm and the pacing that comes with reading with a poem. Obviously, dialogue and a script does have that same sort of comparison, but it's not in the same way. And having worked in music, that's sort of the other polar opposite, and poetry kind of sits in the middle from a filmmaking aspect, which is quite interesting to play with. And like Anthony said, filmmaking sort of encompassing all sort of aspects of other art forms like sound, et cetera. It was interesting to sort of then add that other layer to the poetry. So it's from an experimental perspective, and just like my practice as a filmmaker, looking for going forward is something I definitely would continue to do.
So a kind of film poet.
Exactly.
Yeah. I noticed actually in both of your films that there was a kind of, a set of passages within each of the films which become sort of like kind of blur and glitter, but they're also like kind of traversing the poem. They're moving, they're leaving space for thought and for feeling. Is that something you would have done before coming to work with a poem?
Yeah, I definitely think working with poems like this sort of opens up space in that way, in kind of all forms of filmmaking and storytelling, I guess. Like I've done kind of bits of poetry in film before, but approaching this as a poetry film and kind of working around the poem itself, that being at the center, it definitely opens up sort of that kind of B-roll, these shots that are like not the main narrative kind of shots, and it's the side shots or whatever, the extra bits you get. I feel like making these films for me has sort of reminded me, I guess, that you can use those moments and they can tell a story in themselves and add textures and all of that. And it's sort of those in-betweeny moments, I think, that are really lovely in this form.
Thank you all for coming on behalf of Writers Mosaic and the Royal Literary Fund, and at some distance, the Adrian Brinkhoff Poetry Foundation, whose funding makes it possible. But I would like to thank our filmmakers, Rob Akim and Savannah Aqua, who are going to produce another, how many films is it? 12 films for us this year. And centrally, because I hold poets in high esteem, I would like to thank Marjorie Lotfi and Anthony Anaxaguru for coming here this evening, but participating in launching this strand of UK global majority poets on film. And thank you all very much.